Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from North Rim Bank, supporting economic and business reporting across the state on Alaska Public Media. NorthRimBank.com.
It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Lisa Keller. Harlow Robinson, the Executive Director of Healthy Futures, joins me this week for our annual rundown of the year's inductees into the Alaska Sports Hall of Fame. The induction ceremony will be held at the museum on April 30th and will honor Ali Ostrander, Dallas Seavey, and Bobby Hill in the People category. The moment inductee is Scott Gomez, named NHL Rookie of the Year in 2000. Harlow will also tell us about the finalists and winners of the Director's Awards, including the Pride of Alaska Award for Consistent Excellence in Athletic Competition, the Joe Floyd Award for Significant and Lasting Contribution to Alaska Through Sports, and the Trajan Langdon Award for Leadership, Sportsmanship, and Inspiration. We'll wrap up with the Healthy Futures Program 100 Miles in May, an annual fundraiser that encourages Alaskans to get out and move during the month of May. Keep listening for more on Outdoor Explorer.
Consider a gift of stock to Alaska Public Media. You may avoid paying capital gains tax and receive a deduction. Learn more at alaskapublic.org/stock or contact your financial advisor.
This is Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Lisa Keller. With me today is Harlow Robinson, Executive Director of Healthy Futures and a founding board member of the Alaska Sports Hall of Fame. Thanks for joining me today, Harlow.
Lisa, it's always good to join you this time of year.
Yeah, I was thinking back. I think you're my, I think now officially you've moved into my all-time most interviewed person.
Wow.
Yeah.
I feel pretty honored about that, I guess. I'm a big fan of the show and I've listened to a lot of amazing guests. And so I'm just, that's a pretty flattering thing to hear.
Yeah. Well, I'm just honored that you come and show up every year and are willing to do it. So I really appreciate it because it's always exciting to hear who's going to be inducted into the Sports Hall of Fame.
And I always enjoy getting a chance to talk about the new class of inductees because it's a little bit of our history as a state, and there's no better place to share that than here on a statewide radio show.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to try to fit in Healthy Futures towards the end. I know we always start to run out of time because you and I both get excited about these inductees. But let's start talking first about the Alaska Sports Hall of Fame, whose motto is teach, honor, and inspire. And of course, most people might be familiar going through the airport if you've been through that's where all of the pictures and of all the inductees are. I think you're running out of space, right?
Yeah, we are officially out of space. So that's a ongoing project, and we have some options that we'll share publicly hopefully before long. But that is the physical bricks and mortar, if you will, of the Alaska Sports Hall of Fame. And of course, you can always go to alaskasportshall.org to see our virtual Hall of Fame, where every inductee has their own page on our website and a lot of really cool stuff, bios, video biographies, photo galleries, etc. So that is that's an equally important part of the Hall of Fame.
You know, when I was looking everything up on the website prepping for this, I also noticed something about, I wasn't able to navigate back to it. I don't know why, but something about the 49, is that the nominations, the 49
people who are nominated in? So the nominations are changing somewhat, or the way people vote is changing?
So over time, we, you know, our process for public voting has grown from the very first year, the first year that we had a selection for the Hall of Fame, which was back in 2006, I believe, we just had an open ballot. So any public member, any member of the public could go and just make a ballot, list their five choices for the Hall of Fame. And so what we did was we took the 50 top vote getters that were not selected into the Hall of Fame, and we put them on our website as sort of a candidates page, because we wanted the public to be able to go and vote and have some guidance, just because it's kind of overwhelming. And Alaska is a huge diverse state with so many different sports and the geography that I think the public feedback is it would be a lot easier if we had some ideas of, you know, who to select. But we've always also provided a write-in page, and we had a way of changing that over time. Like every time a name got taken off and inducted, we had a way to add new names. But, you know, over time, it had been 15 years, and we realized that there were some really great candidates that were not on that page, and then there are others that just weren't really getting the consideration that we thought they might. So we had this big informal survey among sports experts and coaches, et cetera, around the state. And we basically said, who are the names that you think absolutely need to be on this page? And then we just kind of, as scientifically as possible, and we had them rank them, so that at the end of the day, we landed on 49 for being the 49th state.
Yeah, and I think that's great. I love that.
And Beth Bragg, huge shout out to her, the, you know, longtime sports journalist. She wrote capsules up for every one of these candidates. And so, you know, we spent a little bit of time on it, and we're really happy with where it is. And we also realize, I think we need to have a process for kind of reviewing that every year and making sure that it feels current and that the right names are on that list. And then I should say, we also just really encourage people to also continue to write in votes, because like I said, it's a big state and there are so many people that have done great things, and we don't want people to think just if someone's not on that candidate page that they're not worthy of being considered for the Hall of Fame. So that's the origin of that 49.
Okay. I loved that concept. I think that's great. That's really exciting, because it was kind of getting overwhelming looking through everybody when you go vote too.
Right. It's overwhelming not to have any suggestions, and it's overwhelming to have too many. So
yep.
It was hard to figure out where that line should be. But, you know, one of the things I learned in this job is it's just hard to say no, period, in general. Yeah. And we always hear, you know, why isn't so-and-so inducted, or why isn't so-and-so on the candidates page? And it's not that they're not worthy of great respect and appreciation. It's just that we do have to draw a line. And at the end of the day, we are the Hall of Fame, not the Hall of Very Good.
Yeah. Yeah.
And sometimes that line is hard to draw, but it has to be drawn.
Mm-hmm. So the way it works is that, you know, you send this out that it's open for the public to vote. So the public gets essentially one vote. And then you have this board of people like Beth Bragg, and they make kind of the final decision, right?
Well, so right, just like you said, the public, the cumulative vote of the public is summarized into one ballot. So just imagine that's one ballot out of, there are nine selection panel members. They also complete a ballot that looks just like the public ballot. And then the final ballot is the cumulative vote of all of our living inductees. So they also participate in this in the same way as the public would, but they have their own ballot. So really in total, there are 11 ballots. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, the public, you could look at it and go, well, the public has just 1/11th of the say. But I think the way the public is most impactful is all the nomination, the, mm-hmm. you know, emails. And we have a recommendation page on our website where people can just write as long or short of a persuasive argument for somebody as they'd like. And all our selection panel members are required to read all that material before they sit down and discuss the vote and complete their own ballots. Mm-hmm. And that over the course of time, we've seen the public have a lot of influence through that process.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's get into the individual inductees. And this year, and what was kind of striking to me is how young all of them are, and they're all still currently in their careers. And that's pretty exciting to have such a, you know, a kind of a fresh and contemporary class like that.
That's a really good way to describe this group. Yeah, I think we don't have an age requirement or, some Hall of Fames have something like they have to be retired for 5 years before they can be considered. And it's just too putting us criteria on something like this where we're considering athletes and people involved in sports in so many different ways. It's just, it would be really hard to have any sort of definition that made sense. Because, for example, Allie Ostrander, she could go on to have a great coaching career after her running career. Mm-hmm. So what the panel and what we decided is that the panel and the public, et cetera, can decide when somebody is kind of has a body of work that's, you know, worthy of this kind of honor. And so, yeah, mm-hmm. Allie Ostrander, Dallas Seavey, Bobby Hill, three athletes who are really, I think you could say, although Bobby Hill is probably closer to the end of his athletic career, three athletes that are really peaking at this point or near their prime, at least. So it's exciting. It's going to be great to have them in the room and just feel this kind of air of recency about, obviously mm-hmm. Dallas Seavey just won his sixth Iditarod, mm-hmm. A couple months ago. So it's going to feel exciting just to have this new breath of air with this group of inductees, mm-hmm. Fresh air, I should say.
So let's start with Allie and let's talk about her career. And I think when I think of Allie, what I think of a lot now at this point is how adaptable she's been when something in her running is what I should say. You know, she's been a track athlete. She's been a mountain runner. She just had a great world cross country running championship performance. I think was she the second American just like a couple weeks ago? She was 30th overall. She wanted to finish in the top 30. So I really think of how adaptable she's been. And then I also think about how honest she has been about her eating disorder and the role that's played in her running, which I think is brave and also just really important to acknowledge that this is a problem, particularly in running for women and men.
Yeah, there's a lot to think about with Allie Ostrander. You mentioned that just dynamic, mm-hmm. adaptable. On her induction portrait, one of her bullet points that kind of highlight her career talks about how rare of an athlete she is to have. She's actually competed for the United States in three disciplines: mountain running, track and field, and cross country, which I'm not sure, but if she may well be the only athlete to have done all three of those in our country, but she's certainly part of a very small group. And, you know, Alaskans are pretty unique. Allie, obviously a super elite athlete, but she grew up playing basketball and soccer. And I think up until, you know, her teen years, running was more of an afterthought than her main sport. She was an athlete. And mm-hmm. I think that well-roundedness in growing up and not being, you know, just like funneled into a specific, you know, field, really helped her to become the dynamic runner that she became. And
you know, I have to say, you know, you and I are close in age, and we grew up as multi-sport athletes. So, you know, our parents taking us out and doing lots of different things, and we know from those times, like, that's really the best solid foundation for sports later in life, is to have a variety of experiences in sports. And Keegan Randall is another great example of an athlete who didn't specialize too early. And the time to specialize is when you hit your teen years, you know? So yes, it's really exciting to see somebody who's younger, who really had that broad range of sport experience as a kid.
You see that, and you just hope that parents, coaches, et cetera, can look at the success of someone like Ali Ostrander and realize that, you know, you don't necessarily need to pull them off the soccer team so they can run track and field through high school to have great success. I think it ultimately is really beneficial, and it just kids need to be kids and be involved in those kinds of things and enjoy them. And it makes them probably if they do decide to specialize in a sport, they're going to not emotionally get burnt out on it, like they would if they, they become a, you know, just grinding on a particular sport at starting at age 12 or something. So Lisa, I feel like there's so much to say about Ali. There's so much to say about all these athletes. And I know we have a limited time, but I think you summarized her really well. She's, you know, I know the selection panel, when they look at runners, and Alaska has a lot of great ones. There's only one runner that's been inducted specifically for running into the Hall of Fame now, and that's Don Clary, who was, you know, an Olympic runner, highly decorated. And Ali, I think, is the next one. And we do have a couple mountain runners, like Bill Spencer and Nancy Peace. And that's a little different. It's a little different sport. But as far as pure running ability and talent, I think Ali was really worthy of it. And there are some other runners I think we'll see get inducted too. Male and female, but I'm really, you know, Ali Ostrander raised the bar. She really
absolutely
in every level, from track and field. You know, I think one of her high points so far with her career, like you said, she just competed a couple of weeks ago in the world cross country, but 3-time NCAA national champion steeplechase racer at Boise State. So, you know, incredible, remarkable.
And she's like 5'2" or something. Right. I mean, that's the other thing that's so amazing.
Does not look like your typical steeplechase runner.
Not
and that goes back to her athleticism too, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, and then also another thing that's kind of probably a lot of Alaskans remember is, as a junior runner in Mount Marathon, she absolutely destroyed all the records. She won it 6 straight years, going all the way back to when she was about, it must have been 11, I think, because you can only run it till you're 17, so probably 12 through 17. And her final year, she won it outright. She beat Luke Jaeger, the male runner.
It was Luke,
and you know, Luke was very you know, I'd like to go back and read Luke's quotes about Ali, but I remember him saying, you know, Luke, who's now, you know, a U.S. ski team member, so he's no slouch. But
right.
There's no shame in losing to Ali Ostrander. So.
See, what I love about that is this idea that girls can never beat boys is just false. And as we see more girls and women be socialized into sports, I think we're still just at not even the limit of what girls and women can do in sports. And so that was what was really exciting to me when she won that, is like, girls can win outright. It can happen.
I agree. And that's something I think we're glad to immortalize that with the Hall of Fame. And plaque and mention of that in on her plaque. And you mentioned finally one last thing with Allie. She's a very great spokesperson for eating disorders. She's mm-hmm. been very public about her own challenges, and I think that kind of emotional vulnerability has been really impactful. And all mm-hmm. you have to do is go to her Instagram page and see how many followers she has, and see the kind of response that people have to her comments. And it's something that, like you mentioned, especially female athletes, but not mm-hmm. specifically, it's something that, you know, maybe is not talked about enough yet. And she's really helping to make it more of a public conversation. So,
yeah.
And she's, this world championship competition she was just in was kind of the new Allie, post eating disorder, and mm-hmm. and just kind of taught role modeling how you can be an elite athlete and be healthy. Mm-hmm. So pretty inspirational.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so let's move on to Dallas Seavey, who's fresh off his sixth Iditarod win, which sets a record outright. He's got it now. And he's still very young.
Yeah, it just felt like a matter of time, didn't it?
It did.
This guy seemed
inevitable.
He is just rewriting. He has rewritten the record books. And like you said, he's still young for the sport. Mm-hmm. No telling where he'll end. I have a feeling we're going to have to keep updating his plaque, though.
Yeah.
much like we had to do with Keegan Randall over the years. She'd come through the airport and say, "Hey, I noticed my plaque needs to be updated. I just got back from winning another this or that." in a very, lighthearted way.
Yeah,
Dallas,
course.
Much like we talked about Ali Ostrander, just an elite athlete, grew up as he actually competed at the National Olympic Trials in wrestling, Roman Greco wrestling.
I knew that. Yeah, that's
to the
new
Olympic
thing for me.
Training Center to train for the U.S. Olympic team for Roman Greco wrestling. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. he was that level of athlete coming into the sport, and just an incredibly driven athlete who was always looking for ways to do something that, dog mushing in Alaska is a pretty long, a sport with a long tradition and a lot of really innovative mushers, and he still is always looking for ways to do what he does better. And I've come to know Dallas over the years, just from he helps us out with our Healthy Futures program from time to time. He's I think sometimes he gets, especially when he was younger, a reputation for being, cocky is a word that I've heard used for him. But I can tell you, he's a very thoughtful and a really solid character person who cares very deeply about his sport and has a lot of respect for the mushers that came before him. I know when Lance Mackey passed away last year, I spoke with him and he talked about how much he looked up to Lance and how much he learned from him. And I think he's somebody who just watched and learned from all these other great mushers and just absorbed it like a sponge. And then was also saying, "I think I could do this part better." And, where a lot of mushers were not great athletes, Dallas certainly is. He's, if you look at photos of him in races over the years, he's off the sled more than he's on it. Mm-hmm. He's running. Mm-hmm. And he's trying to be in any possible way he can be more efficient and more help his team, his dog team. He's doing it. And
well, you see his name pop up in community running trail races too. So every once in a while, I'll be looking through some results and, "Oh, Dallas Seavey did that race,"
That's
so he's
right.
Doing other things in the off season too, to keep himself fit.
He's so I'm just trying to, I don't have the statistics in front of me, but as far as how many races he's run, I think it's around 12 Iditarods. So I'd have to look it up, but he's won the race nearly half of the times he's run it.
Well, and from the get-go, like his first appearance, he did well, if I remember correctly, like top 10, wasn't he?
At 18, he was the youngest to run the Iditarod, and at 25, he became the youngest to win the race. And then, let's see, a couple years later, he set the speed record, and then he broke his own speed record. So, you know, he's from a young age, he came in and he kind of gave notice that he was here to elevate the sport. And of course, you know, we should mention he comes from a line of dog mushers. And Mitch, his father, Mitch, obviously is also a highly accomplished musher, and his brothers raced. His grandfather also was a good one of the early Iditarod mushers. So it's probably in his genes, and he probably got his start at a very young age, you know, being on the back of a sled.
And his intention is to keep going, right? And this isn't the end of his career now that he's broken the record. Like you said, you're going to have to update that plaque, maybe on a yearly basis.
My guess is that we're not stopping at six.
Yeah. All right. You know, so he's gone overseas and raced too, hasn't he?
He has. He's gone over to, I know, Scandinavia. He raced over there. Yeah. So, you know, shout out to Rick Swenson. He held that title of five for a long time. And there are a whole bunch of mushers that have won four. But, you know, they're all household names. But, you know, Dallas Seavey is, it's going to take a while to kind of get our minds around it, but he's now the, you know, for decades, we talked about Rick Swenson being the winningest Iditarod musher ever. And that's all in the rear view now.
The other thing I have to mention is several years ago, oh boy, this had to be pre-COVID, he was in that reality show, which I loved. It was where they were doing different missions every day or something, and they were a team. I should have looked it up. I cannot remember the name of it. And it was pretty impressive. There was a bunch of Alaskans in it. Like Marty Rainey was in it. It was really fun to watch him, and he's a good reality star person. He says good things, and he's funny and serious and hardcore. He was entertaining to watch.
I bet he'd be great for that. He's a very Alaskan kind of guy, and he's a what I would call a next generation Alaskan outdoorsman. So it's kind of cool to, you know, have people like him that are carrying the torch. Dog mushing needs it. A lot of the kind of the legends that we think of in dog mushing, that, you know, the Martin Boozers and the Jeff Kings and the you know, Ali Zirkles and the Susan Butchers and Rick Swensons, they've all kind of, you know, they've moved on. And you know, for the sport to continue to thrive, we need these young faces. And we'll talk about another one here during the hour as well.
You are listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Lisa Keller. We're going to take a short break, and when we return, we'll hear more from Harlow Robinson about the Alaska Sports Hall of Fame 2024 honorees.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes Store, or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
You are listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Lisa Keller. My conversation with Harlow Robinson, Executive Director of the Alaska Sports Hall of Fame, continues. Okay, so let's talk about Bobby Hill, who I think I have voted for every single time he's been on the list. And I was so thrilled to see that he is finally an individual inductee. I think his accomplishments are just amazing.
They sure are. Bobby Hill is without a doubt the greatest Special Olympics athlete in Alaska's history, far and away. And what he's achieved on the local, national, and world stage is historic. He's a highly beloved figure in Alaska sports, especially in the Anchorage area. And, you know, our induction criteria is focused on pride and positive distinction that person brings. And Bobby Hill embodies that in everything, his personality, his achievements. And I'm really thrilled we have a Special Olympics athlete getting inducted into the Hall of Fame. We talk about being inclusive and, you know, we're walking the walk, and it felt like it was a matter of time. You know, we induct small classes every year. He had a great World Games in 2023, and he won one gold and three silver medals in powerlifting. Just a really inspirational performance at age 43, I believe.
Wow.
Yeah, 44, sorry, 44 years old.
That's so awesome.
Just maybe his swan song performance on that, you know, competitions, we'll see. But, you know, COVID set, there was some factors that kind of made it questionable whether he was going to make it back. It's not easy to make the World Games. It's a really hard process to, some say it's even harder as a Special Olympics athlete to make the World Games than it is in the regular sports, just because of some of the qualification criteria. So he, you know, as an athlete, was highly successful in his sport. And having that success at the World Games in 2023 was just kind of like, you know, it made it a no-brainer to get the guy into the Hall of Fame at that point. And that they kind of added that last piece to his resume.
So I think sitting here thinking about this, you know, I have family of choice, and so a family of choice niece who has Down syndrome, and she's about the same age as Bobby Hill. And 50 years ago, kids with Down syndrome weren't given any options. They had nothing. You know, they were oftentimes institutionalized or weren't given high expectations of what they could achieve. And once they started having those opportunities, it was really clear that they can achieve like what anybody else wants to achieve. You know, they can read, they can write, they can play sports, they can dance, and they can act. And so I kind of really see him as like this bigger representation of the change in how we view people with Down syndrome, which I think is just such a great progress in our culture.
Special Olympics has been, you just described it well, how it's brought a section of our population into the public in such a positive way. And I feel like, you know, many of us have been involved in helping out with Special Olympics in some way or other. And it's just an uplifting thing to do. The athletes participating there, you just see the lightness of human spirit in their participating, and sometimes regardless of the results, it's just that they're out there and they're feeling a sense of meaning and purpose. And they have, you know, a whole variety of personalities just like the rest of the population. And and Bobby Hill just happens to be a highly charismatic, just like his emotions are right there. And There's a great video of him over in Berlin at the World Games last year where before he does his big lift where he wins the gold medal, he stops and he gets the whole crowd pumped and kind of gets them all cheering and on their feet. And you can tell he needs it. He needs that energy. And then he goes and lifts. And it's just like, if you're not fired up by that, you know, you're just not, you're missing something. So yeah, it's really cool. You're right. It's representative of, how far we've come as a civilization. And, mm-hmm. You know, I'm thrilled that he's going to be enshrined into the Alaska Sports Hall of Fame. And his, you know, if we want to talk about his statistics, he's won 11 world championship medals, which, you know, that's pretty phenomenal. Over three World Games, 2003, he won a gold and a silver. 2007, he won four silvers. And then in 2023, he won the gold and the three silvers I just mentioned. So
wow. That's just amazing.
I don't think there's many Alaskans that have won 11 medals at the peak of their sport, world level. So pretty impressive.
Well, it is a fantastic class. I mean, it's just really exciting to see all three of them. So, and this actually might be a good time to kind of put in there that the induction ceremony is April 30th, and it will be at the Anchorage Museum. And are tickets free or do they cost something?
Yeah, no, the beautiful thing is there are no tickets.
Oh, you can just show up.
Just show up. We've always wanted to make this event as easy and accessible to the public as possible. We do have a VIP reception beforehand and tables for the VIP guests and honorees. But if you're not a VIP, we still love you. And you can just walk in. It's open to the general public. We have road seating. And sometimes at the museum atrium, the seats all fill up and there's great it's great standing room space. You can go up above and lean on the railing, or you know, we have a, you know, open bar and whatnot. And so we make it an event that's really fun to attend and just be able to walk in. And
it's just an incredibly inspiring event. When you go there, you're just like overwhelmed by how inspirational it all is, you know.
Every year I come away feeling like, wow, that was maybe our best event ever yet. But I think in reality, they all have their own kind of unique personality about them. And, you know, a lot of inspirational speeches, a lot of funny ones. And I should say short. It's a big program with our athletes of the year. And so we try to keep the program really moving. It's kind of like the ESPYs of Alaska, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sport awards, and then kind of the evening is capped off by the inductions.
Mm-hmm. So let's move into the moment inductee, and that is Scott Gomez being named NHL Rookie of the Year in the year 2000. And I got a shout out, go East High, because you know we always like to say who puts out the best athletes, and of course I'm an East alum, and I always say it's East High has put out the best athletes. Well, Harley, you might disagree with me.
I think you've got a pretty good argument there. If you go to East High and look at all the retired jerseys on the wall, a good number of those jerseys are in the Alaska Sports Hall of Fame as well. So,
yep.
I don't know who could put a better group of athletes together and to argue the case against East High School and Scott Gomez, Keegan Randall, Trajan Langdon, et cetera. It's mm-hmm. pretty darn impressive. Yeah. And, you know, Scotty Gomez, I don't think we need to talk too much about him. He was inducted into the Hall of Fame in our charter class. And I think he's viewed widely as kind of the golden boy of Alaskan hockey. And hockey, of course, is a very Alaskan sport. And he just like he burst onto the scene his very first year in the NHL and won the Stanley Cup. And you know, brought the cup home to Alaska, and all of a sudden Alaskans were visible on the largest stage of the sport in a really awesome way. And the other thing that happened that year is that Scotty Gomez, just like, he was a incredibly gifted skater and playmaker, and he more than doubled his point total was more than double the next rookie.
Whoa.
And he was the runaway winner of the Rookie of the Year award, which is known as the Calder Trophy. He earned 49 out of the 58 first place votes in winning the award. And, you know, up until then, Alaska had had a few people that had made the league and kind of had a cup of coffee, if you will, in the league, and certainly achieved great things at some level. But, you know, Scotty Gomez was all of a sudden a household name, and his whole story coming from Airport Heights and, you know, being a Hispanic kid, not your typical hockey family. You know, they didn't have a ton of money, and they weren't, you know, going off to, you know, hockey camps. And, you know, hockey can be a sport that's requires a lot of money and, you know, parents that can afford to, you know, put their kids in the best possible position. But Scotty got where he was with, you know, a lot of just God-given talent and, you know, and drive. And so winning the Rookie of the Year was just kind of affirmation of what a kid from Airport Heights, Alaska can do. And
then also kind of inspirational as well, as he's remained an Alaskan. He still pretty much lives here, right?
Yeah, he is coaching now down in Vancouver, Canada, but very connected to Alaska. And he started the Scotty Gomez Foundation, which has given a ton to the hockey community, especially girls hockey. He certainly is an Alaskan, identifies as an Alaskan. And this is a nice way to recognize when we induct moments into the Hall of Fame. We're really looking for those times in our history that kind of highlight, you know, if you're going to write a book about Alaskan sports, this would be a chapter in it. And that's the way I like to look at it. And so this is very historically significant, and it's one that people, especially in the hockey community, really remember fondly. And we hope to have Scotty here for the ceremony.
Oh, good.
He's planning on it. He's aiming to. His team is also in the playoffs. But he says Tuesday, the night of our ceremony, is a good day for him. The playoff games are near the end of the week. So we're planning on having him. We're looking forward to being able to kind of honor him and remember this moment with him in person. So it'll be a lot of fun.
So this year, there's no event inductee.
Yeah, I talked at the beginning about how we are the Hall of Fame, not the Hall of Very Good. And we're drawing the line. I think we will induct more events. We inducted one each year for our first 15 years. And I think we just felt like we wanted to catch our breath and just have a look at where we're at. And there's no rush to induct another one right away. I think there are a lot of great events still out there that that are what we would consider, you know, famous or just like so special that we should enshrine them in some way. But I feel like it was a good point to just stop and take a break. And just because an event has been going on for a long time doesn't in itself make it something that we should just automatically induct. So we just wanted to think about what it means to be an inducted event. And we felt like the best way to do that would be to take a couple of years pause and then revisit. So, so yes, we did not induct event this year. I suspect we will in the future.
Okay. So let's move in to the Director's Awards. And as we always get here, we've always talked extensively about the past, the first four awards we talked about. They're always very interesting. And these are, the Director's Awards are just fantastic as well. And then we again are beginning to be short on time. So I know we're going to have to try to hustle through these, but I love the Director's Awards. So these are kind of like the contemporary what's happened this year. It's not necessarily a whole career or anything. And so let's start with the Pride of Alaska Youth Awards, which is essentially the Youth Athlete of the Year in Alaska. And
that's right. Yep.
Okay. So for the boys, so first of all, they're, are three chosen, and then there's one who wins the award. So the finalists were Colton Paul, Utahousie Tuafua. That's a tough name for me. I hope I got close. And PJ Foy won the Pride of Alaska, which is the Alaska Athlete of the Year award for youth. And he was a finalist last year. So what is his sport?
EJ Foy is a swimmer, and he's one of the most, we know who is the most decorated swimmer in Alaska history, Lydia Jacoby, but PJ Foy, you know, he is setting records, you know, like you said, he was a finalist last year, and then all he's done since then is break all of his old records and go on and compete in the they call it the zone, Western Zone races, and they're for seniors from the West region, which includes a dozen states. And he came out of that with 5 gold medals, and they have a point scoring system. He's the top point scorer of the meet for all boys swimmers, and these would be seniors from the kind of Western Zone 12 states. So that just gives you an idea of his level of skill in the pool. And he's super dynamic. He's not a specialist. He does everything from the breaststroke to the butterfly, and he's swimming next fall at the University of North Carolina. So like you said, he was a finalist last year. He did nothing to make the voters feel like he wasn't, you know, it was kind of it felt like a good progression. And you mentioned the other finalists, you know, we're so diverse as a state. And and I don't know if you say Utahouse or Utahouse
C. Yeah.
Uktiavik, Barrow High School, but just a phenomenal talent, both as a wrestler and a football player. And then Colton Paul, who set 2 world records in Alaska Native Games,
oh, wow.
One at the Native Youth Olympics, and then went on, turned 18 in the spring, and then went on to be named athlete of the event for the World Eskimo Indian Olympics and set another world record. So
wow.
Just really lives and breathes for Alaska Native Games. And all three of these guys, you know, at the end of the day, you're looking at character, and all three of them are from the nominations we receive and everything we hear, they're just first class kids. And so we love, you know, seeing a group of finalists like this that are really not only standout athletes, but standout in their character.
Mm-hmm. So the girls Pride of Alaska Youth Award, there were three finalists. Emma Beck was a finalist. Maya Mayataki was a finalist. And then the winner was Emily Robinson. And she was the Trajan Langdon Youth Award finalist last year, or a Trajan. I don't think she won it, but she was a finalist for the Trajan Langdon Youth Award. And again, we have a girl beating men dog mushing, right? Not only beating
there.
Men, but they are beating Iditarod champions.
Yes, I see a theme here with the show. And, you know, we talked earlier about Dallas Seavey. Emily Robinson is another, really another newer generation of musher who is just, she is crushing it. She's won her third straight junior Iditarod, only been done once. She has a chance to win four straight, because she'll have one more before she's done. And she, like you said, she beat two former Iditarod champions in winning the Kinnick 200, which is her longest race that she's ever run. And beyond that, she is a real voice for dog mushing. And you talked about last year how she was considered for the Trajan Langdon Award because she speaks very eloquently. She's mature beyond her years and very passionate about the sport, and talking about how important the sport is in our state. And she's a really, really impressive young woman and highly, highly successful within her sport. The other two finalists, it's Mai Matiaki is how you pronounce her name. Just an elite soccer player and flag football player at Diamond High School, going off to play soccer next fall at Air Force Academy. And then Emma Beck, who won the Gatorade Volleyball Player of the Year, led Kenai to their first ever state championship last year and then repeated this year, and was also a real standout basketball player. So it's always hard choosing one. And I should say this, these lists of three finalists come from a bigger list of 10 candidates that we oftentimes it's hard to narrow it down to 10. We get nominations from all over the state, and you know, so to end up on this short list is really an honor in and of itself. And we try to really profile these all the finalists on our Alaska Sports Report media outlet. If you want to learn more about any of them, check it out at alaskasportsreport.com, our website, which is a program of the Alaska Sports Hall of Fame. And Beth Bragg wrote some great articles about all these finalists.
So the Pride of Alaska Awards adults. I need to back up for a second. Emily Robinson, if you want to see a really cool video, there's a video of her passing Brent Sass at the end of the race. And he's just kind of cruising along. Like, I don't think he had any idea there was anybody that close. And she just goes shooting past him. I think it was in the last couple miles of the race, right?
That's right. Yeah, it's a great video.
It went
viral. It's about as, you know, it's one of the more dramatic kind of action scenes you'll see in a dog mushing race. And you're right, she snuck up on him. He had no idea she was coming, and it was a pretty savvy dog mushing. From what I'm no dog musher, but from what I could tell and read, there was strategy behind it, and she just kind of waited till the last minute and pounced.
Didn't
have time to respond.
Okay, so we don't have a lot of time left, so I definitely want to get this through the Pride of Alaska Awards for the adults. So the women, the finalists were Christy Marvin and Lydia Jacoby. So the winner, Alyssa Peely, and this is her second year winning this, I believe, right? She was Athlete of the Year last year, too, was up against some stiff competition, but she has had an amazing career, specifically at University of Utah in the last couple of years, and just wrapped it up. And I think she's declared for the draft, which will happen for the WNBA draft, which will happen on April 15th.
Yeah, Alyssa Peely is kind of like a player that no one has really seen before. She was a finalist for the NCAA Player of the Year. She, like you said, she was our Pride of Alaska winner last year, and she actually had a better year this year than last year.
Mm-hmm.
And it was impossible to overlook that. And she that's why she is the you know, back-to-back winner now. And she probably will be, she's projected to be a top 10 draft pick in the WNBA mm-hmm. next year. And yeah. the reason why I say that no one's seen a player quite like her is that she's not, I mean, she's tall to your average person. She's over 6 feet tall. But if you you look at your typical NCAA women's basketball power forward or center, they're typically 6'4", 6'6", 6'7". And she is just so crafty and talented. Mm-hmm. And she has a as you say in the world of basketball, she has a bag. She has so many moves. She has post moves. She has amazing ball handling skills. And she was an elite three-point shooter. So just a really talented, skilled passer shooter. Every aspect of the game, and able to compensate for being shorter than a lot of the people she was around. And so it'd be really exciting to see how she does at the next level. And
definitely
certainly a basketball star from Alaska and the long line of basketball stars that have come out of the state.
Mm-hmm. And then the men's Pride of Alaska award, the finalists were Jeremy Swayman, the hockey player, Dallas Seavey, which I think he already got a really good award. So, and the winner was Gus Schumacher, who just had an absolutely unbelievable season and a historic season.
Right. Yeah, it would have been a little weird for Dallas Seavey to win, be inducted yeah. into the Hall of Fame, and also win Athlete of the Year.
Yeah,
certainly was a great candidate. But I think at the end of the day, Gus Schumacher and what he did, the historical significance. You know, his first American male skier since 1983 to win a World Cup race. And the way he did it in America, in Minnesota, in front of 20,000 fans, and just, you know, a culmination for Gus of a lot of expectations being placed on him from a young age. He had a decorated career as a kid here growing up in Anchorage at Service High School. And then he won in the World Junior Championships. So I think he kind of went into the world of skiing like as the great next hope for American skiing. And mm-hmm. then he had some setbacks and some challenges. And then this year, just put it all together. And, this is another one of those viral video moments, but if you get a chance to go and Google up his finish in Minnesota at the World Cup, it's really one of those make the hair on the back of your neck stand up. It's really exciting. And yeah. Gus will be here for the ceremony, and we look forward to presenting him with the Pride of Alaska Award.
Thanks for joining me today, Harlow.
Yeah, Lisa, it's been a pleasure. Maybe we need a 2-hour show to
I
do.
Know. I think we do.
So much to say about all these athletes, but I really appreciate you checking in with me every year, and hope to see you and anyone else that would like to join us for a really special evening on April 30th.
That's it for today's show. Thanks to my guest, Harlow Robinson. You can find pictures and links to the Alaska Sports Hall of Fame and the Healthy Futures 100 Miles of May on the Outdoor Explorer page on alaskapublic.org. The show is produced by Eric Bork. My name is Lisa Keller, and from all of our hosts here at Outdoor Explorer, thanks for listening, and we'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and in your favorite podcast app. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life informed. This is Alaska Public Media.